Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 211.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we rejoice as the big tech companies are in D.C. this week being questioned about their monopolistic behaviors. I'm your host and antitrust nerd, Nagin Farsad. I won't bore you with more antitrust stuff or entertain you with it, because this week we're going to talk about relief bills, we'll check in on federal troops, and we'll also talk about the RNC and the DNC conventions. And, ooh, last but not least, white fragility, a new take. Today, I'm really excited by the panel. And to continue that tradition, we have with us an actor who you've seen on The Legends of Tomorrow, one of the DC comics. She is, by the way, the first Muslim superhero. So exciting. She's also producer of the podcast. That's What She Said. You guys, it's Tala Ash. And also joining us on the panel is, well, you've heard him here before. It's been a while since he's been with us, so we're so happy to have him back. He's a writer. He's a producer. You've seen his handiwork on The Daily Show and on Full Frontal. He even has an Emmy for the things that he's done because he's fancy. It is Trayvon Free. Hey, Trayvon.
Hey, how are you guys?
I just spit doing your introduction like a classically trained stage actor. So
like John Bingeroff in Hamilton.
Right, front
what
row.
What that spittle was.
All right, are you guys ready for us to get into it?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right, here we go with topic number one. Friday! It's the last day of pandemic pay if you have filed for unemployment, which is a shit ton of you out there in America. So I guess my first question is, where are we with the Senate bill and them actually doing something? Side note, they've had months to do something. And here we are at the last minute, right before pandemic pay runs out on Friday, and they still haven't done the thing. So my question to you is, yeah, where are we? What are your thoughts, Trayvon?
I think we're in the middle of nowhere. I don't think we seem to have a grasp on the fact that we are in the middle of a pandemic and that 40% of Americans can't pay their rent, didn't pay their rent. And I don't think our government gives a shit. I mean, I see they were talking about reducing the payments to $200, mm-hmm. which, I mean, come on, just send me an envelope with a fist in it that punches me in the face when I open it. if that's what you're going to do. It's kind of ridiculous that even when the country is at its most vulnerable and people are hurting, you get to see exactly what it looks like when you have the most incompetent leadership. When people say, what's the worst that could happen in 2016? Well, you're living it.
Trayvon, we already did get an envelope with a fist in it that punches us in the face because the last stimulus checks were on delay because they had to have Donnie's signature on them.
Yeah, that's basically a punch in the face.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Okay, so Tala, the Democrats want to spend, so Trayvon mentioned, they want to cut the pandemic pay to $200. They also want to do tax cuts and liability protection for businesses. The Dems, so they want to spend a total of $1 trillion. The Dems, on the other hand, want to spend $3 trillion. They want to keep pandemic pay at $600 a week. And for those of you who don't know, I feel like there isn't a person in America who doesn't know someone who at least has filed for unemployment and is receiving unemployment right now. But for those of you who just crazily might not know, there's a weekly $600 pandemic pay on top of what you would normally get for unemployment. Tala, what do you think of these, the difference in these bills?
I mean, it's not surprising, right? But I guess what has been amusing to me is how obsessed the Republicans seem to be with the federal pandemic unemployment compensation, that $600. They mm-hmm. seem so obsessed with how the middle and lower class, everybody who's getting unemployment is going to spend that money. When in that first coronavirus relief package, they gave hundreds of billions of dollars to corporations. The PPP loans, 95% of Black-owned businesses didn't qualify for those. And now they're just obsessed over this, like, $600. It is people's lifeline right now. Can I just plug something really quickly?
Yeah.
On behalf of my industry. There's a group on Instagram and Twitter. They're called Be an Arts Hero. And they're basically advocating on behalf of, you know, people in arts and culture whose jobs are non-existent and
non-existent
will be non-existent for many, many more months. Like, theater is not coming back until 2021. And, like, you know, we're not talking about famous actors. We're not talking about people. We're not talking about 1%. But all the people who make the arts happen, like, they don't have jobs.
Working actors, working, I don't know, the theater custodial staff. I mean, there's so many people affected.
Everything. Yeah. Like, all of these people that make the arts go do not have jobs. And they probably don't necessarily have, especially like the BIPOC community, they don't have a financial safety net. They don't have rich parents helping them through this time. So they need that $600 literally to survive this time. So it's, I mean, I don't know. It's not really like the right thing to do, which, you know, we don't, the government doesn't often do, but it's also like, it makes economic sense. Arts and culture make up $877 billion of the U.S. economy, which I didn't know.
Thank you for whipping out that statistic. I didn't know that either.
I had no idea. And 5 million jobs. There's 5 million jobs from arts and culture right now that, you know, nobody can do. So, I mean, I think that's sort of like and COBRA subsidy. Like, there's so much stuff that, you know, I'm just talking again about like my sort of sector, but there's so many people who that $600 is like their only lifeline, and the fact that they're trying to take it away is insane to me.
It's insane, but I do want to ask the question of both of you, the argument that $600 additional a week is a disincentive to getting a job. And so that's the main complaint of the conservatives. And I want to say, I know some people that are like in the food world and have restaurants and stuff like that. And they have pointed out that in a couple of cases, again, not the majority of cases, but in a couple of cases with their staff, they found that the people don't want to come back as long as there is pandemic pay. you know, there are a variety of reasons for not wanting to come back. Like, and the anxiety of catching coronavirus and being in like a very public facing job is a part of it. You know, so there's other things going on, but they have noticed that like the pandemic pay is giving them, I guess you want to call it the luxury of not of not coming back to work. Trayvon, what do you say to that argument?
I mean, think about the fact that some people are making more money on pandemic pay than they were making at their actual job. And you recognize what kind of shitty situation people have been in for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to me that they think constantly they repeat this thing about how if you give people the bare minimum, they'll just quit life to ride the bare minimum train. And it's like, who out here is sitting at home going, man, if I could just get $600 a week or however often they send out that check, I'd be riding the gravy train out of here for the rest of my life. Like, it's just not, it's not a thing. It's so insane that they think people think that little of themselves. Like, they tout this American exceptionalism, this American dream, but they think we're all a bunch of lazy fucks who just want a little bit of something to get us by, and then that's it.
Well, and the other thing is, it I mean, forgetting, like, you can take all of the emotion out of it, like whether or not we're lazy fucks or whether or not, you know, this is an actual disincentive or whatever, just take all of the emotion out of it. Economists across the spectrum say that if you remove the people that are spending the money that's propping up the economy, like consumer spending right now, are the people that are receiving these like $600 payments. It's mostly, and this is, you know, I remember reading earlier in the pandemic, or like, I remember reading recently that of a study about like the first couple of months of the pandemic, that basically rich people stopped spending and they immediately started hoarding their money, right? So then it became everyone else who was kind of like propping up the economy, because rich people weren't a part of the spending. I wish I could cite that. I don't remember where I read it. But basically the extra unemployment benefits are injecting billions of dollars into the American economy. And if those benefits go away, then the recovery, which is already stop and start and weak, the recovery is bound to completely fail. And this is, again, from this is economists agree on this across the ideological spectrum. There's like a unanimous agreement that it's the lack of jobs, not a lack of willingness to work, that's holding the economy back right now. Obviously, because, and Tala, you already mentioned this in your example about the arts. It's not like these people don't want to go back to their job in the arts. It's that there is no job currently in the arts. You know? So it's just super ridiculous. Or it's like the restaurant industry, you know, they're making so much less than they were. So like, what are all these jobs that you're talking about? And that, I think, is like the most frustrating aspect, is that, you know, conservatives are like sort of fixated on this number of not having it go over $1 trillion, but they don't even necessarily want to listen to the conservative economists who are theoretically on their side, right? That this is a bad move. The other thing I want to point out is any change in the infrastructure of the pandemic payment is going to take weeks, if not months, to cycle through at the state level. We saw that already in March, right? When they initially passed this bill for the $600 pandemic pay, it took weeks. The unemployment was at a standstill in places like New York State. I mean, I think all over the country, but just speaking here anecdotally, no one I knew who was filing for unemployment was able to get it in a timely fashion. You know what I mean? And then try explaining that to your landlord. So that's the other thing. But I also just want to point out, just like on a slightly more gossipy note, although still frustrating as fuck, there's a $2 billion bullet point in the bill that the House is pushing for a new FBI building or for renovations to the current building or whatever. $2 billion.
You know, even Mitch McConnell, like, that was surprising to him. It seemed like when someone asked him about it, he was like, wait, what? Like, even he was like, that's not, the optics there are not good.
I mean,
and
They also had $2 billion for F-35s, $1 billion for surveillance planes, $375 million for armored vehicles, $360 million for missile defense, $283 million for Apache helicopters, all in the bill for coronavirus.
Guys, not the right time.
That's not how you fight a virus. That's not how you fight a virus.
Do they think they're just going to, like, load the virus up onto helicopters and then fly it away? I mean, like, how do they think this works?
Oh, I mean, not to be too cynical, but I'm like, are you going to start a war to distract us from the coronavirus? Because that's what those numbers seem
like. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and at this point, the war could be with anybody. You know what I mean?
Anyone.
Belgium will be
Iran, but who knows?
yeah. Who knows? All right. Well, we will, keep abreast of the situation. It's funny because I think I would have normally been like, oh, we'll know by Friday, but I don't know if we'll actually know by Friday.
Isn't Senate in recess? Didn't McConnell put them in recess for 3 weeks?
I think they're going into recess. Oh, yeah, the idea is that they'll be going into recess. Which is the other thing is, in the middle of a, I'm all for senators going back to their district offices and blah, blah, blah. And then also even senators taking vacation. Like, I get it. I fucking get it. However, in the middle of a pandemic, I'm okay with some, less recess. Like, if you guys need to be there to pass some bills, fucking stick around, because they already said that they can't do the online voting thing. So if that's the case and you have to be in D.C., then Mitch, keep them in D.C., unless, of course, you just want to see some inaction, which maybe that's your thing. Good luck on your election. People of Kentucky will remember that you were into inaction in the middle of, world historic pandemic. All right. Let us take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about troops. Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. We've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or a less creamy kind? And I was kind of I think less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. You can do that. But we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just harshness for like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/FakeTheNation will be taken off. That's pros.com/FakeTheNation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/FakeTheNation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/FakeTheNation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. And we are back, and we're just going to do a quick check-in on federal troops, because we talked about this at length last week with respect to Portland. I just saw a New York Times notification that the federal troops they've agreed to remove them from Portland as long as Portland secures federal properties. So, I mean, there's also federal troops in other parts of the country and other cities. Also, Billy Barr, he testified at Congress this week saying about Portland specifically that, quote, violent rioters and anarchists have hijacked legitimate protests to wreak senseless havoc and destruction. I just wanted to quickly get each of your thoughts on this whole process and how it's landing with you, and how you think it's landing politically for a president who has no plan for his second term. Like, who's made no, sorry, not that he has no plan for a second term. Well, he doesn't, if he should, but he should, but he's made no.
He has a plan for 10 more terms.
Yeah, he has no campaign platform for a second term.
Well, I feel like he's, I mean, fully grasping at straws at this point. He doesn't have a plan, but I feel like one of the plans, if we can call it that, is this. By the way, do you guys know that it's called Operation Diligent Valor? That's no. What it's called, the federal ops.
Wait, it's called what? Can you just repeat it?
Operation Diligent Valor.
Oh, geez. Okay. Yeah.
Because
yeah,
of course it is. But I feel like, I mean, again, this strategy, if we can call it that, is that he's trying to, he's first of all gone to like a liberal city, but a small enough one where I feel like if this was in New York, like it would have gotten different coverage. It would just been a different thing. But I think he's just using it as basically like, he's just stoking the flames to get like footage for his
footage. Yeah.
For his like, videos, for his little election right. videos.
Yeah,
to be like, these liberals, these scary Antifa violent rioters. Like, right. That seems
well,
to be,
you've
like,
seen
the
ad
strategy.
that's like this is Joe Biden's America or whatever. Which is funny because it's like, actually this is continually like, it's currently your America. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like the logic of the ads don't work, because it's like, no, this is happening under your watch. Like, Joe Biden is still just a guy right now.
And the riot footage in that ad wasn't even from here.
Incredible.
Like, it was taken from somewhere else.
It's like some stock footage, like cinematographers like put together some, yeah. It's Trayvon, what did you think of Barr's testimony?
I mean, it was what you expected. He is so under the thumb of Trump and is willing to appear to be such an idiot who doesn't know, who claims to not know anything that's going on with the president. He doesn't know when he's tweeting. He doesn't know what he thinks. He doesn't know what he says, yet he's constantly doing his bidding. And he sat
so
there
true.
for all that time to basically say he didn't know anything. But he, I mean, if anything, it should be called Operation I'm Down 15 Points, because it's all basically him trying to find any way to grasp at anything that will move the needle for him. And it's like, if you think going to Portland and now LA to beat up protesters is going to all of a sudden move the needle in your direction, you were not paying attention last month.
Yeah, and it's making a mockery of his own supporters, because I think his own supporters are like, you know, we get what you're saying, but like, it's also this thing that's happening in Portland. It's not, how is this affecting our lives? Like, I want to talk about pandemic pay. I mean, I still think you can be a Trump supporter and be reasonable. Like, I've been a Trump supporter, but like, really, we need some leadership on the coronavirus, because like, my uncle Larry just died. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it's like. Everyone is being treated. Every one of his, I think, base supporters are being treated like they're dumb, and then they are not dumb, and I think can see through this. All right. Well, you know, we'll keep track of the federal troops in American cities, and what's so interesting is that with this new alert that we got, that the troops are going to be leaving Portland. It's just like, how much money was fucking wasted that could be used on this $3 trillion fucking bill? You know what I mean?
Or like testing troops. Supplies.
Right? We can't even test people. What are you doing?
We just need 1.5 FBI troops? Buildings. That's all we need.
Use these troops to go collect saliva and fucking batch test Americans. What are you doing?
Maybe that's what they were doing in Portland. They were just trying to get their saliva by any means necessary.
DNA swabs.
Yeah. It was really aggressive antibody testing.
Oh, I bet you FDR would have had troops collecting saliva. All right, let's move on to official topic number two. So Trump canceled the big RNC convention that was planned for Jacksonville after moving it from North Carolina because they wanted to establish some pandemic protocols for the convention, which I think is fun and hilarious that they had to cancel it anyway, because there was a huge surge in Florida. So, and a bunch of GOP leaders were like, I'm not going, for the record. Like, you guys can do it, but I'm not going to go. So Trump basically went and canceled it and said, oh, it's not the right time. And he kind of made it seem like he's like the adult, you know, that was able to make that decision. What do you think of this cancellation? What do you think that means for his party?
I don't think it was his idea. I mean, I feel like he would have wanted to have the convention if everyone in Florida had coronavirus. He still would have wanted to do it.
Yeah.
I think it was definitely probably somebody in the campaign having the sense to be like, okay, maybe let's just not like go this far, especially after we all got coronavirus when we went to Tulsa. let's just scale it back a little bit.
The funny thing is, like, the actual convention part where they decide on the platform is still going to happen in Charlotte, North Carolina. And here's another fun thing. So Trump said that they're going to do the convention through tele-rallies.
He trademarked
the tele-rally.
Sometimes I love this guy, man. He doesn't disappoint. It's so on brand.
But I'm like, bro, nobody wants to use the word tele-rally.
Right, you can have it.
It's yours. Fucking it's yours.
No one's going to fight you in court for that.
Yeah. The Democrats will say, like, virtual fundraiser with, like, a few more syllables, and it's fine.
So
we're going to have a tele-rally, trademark me.
Do you think that not having a convention and that not being able to do these rallies will in itself, like, forget just everything else, do you think part of what made Donnie a viable candidate in 2016 was that these rallies had some sort of an entertaining effect that carried through to the polls? Like, do you think that without the rally, without the whatever, God, dare I say, charismatic energy that he provides to these mass audiences, that he could still win? Like, is a tele-rally going to work for him?
No, because I don't think the bulk of his followers can figure out the Zoom thing. I think they probably have a little trouble getting remembering to mute themselves. They'll be talking over each other. I don't know. I don't think it'll have the same energy, because like it's hard enough listening to him talk anytime, let alone on a video call where there's literally no energy.
Right, right. I was talking to, I heard for like this expert speaking and on a Zoom call about like how to present on Zoom. And he was saying that like, if you don't change what you're doing every 7 minutes, like in with it, like at the 7 minute mark is when people on Zoom start to go into a catatonic state. And so you have to kind of like dramatically change like what you're doing or like the screen, you know, you have to screen share, you have to do something because that's how like mind numbing Zoom becomes. And so I just was thinking like Donnie will go and he'll do the same tone of speaking for like two full boring horrible hours. I would get into a catatonic state live, you know what I mean, like watching him do that, never mind on Zoom. So I do also think, you know, in the way that cults might work, and I'm not trying to reduce Trump supporters into like cult followers or anything, but just like in the way that cults work on presence, like, you know, it's different being around David Koresh than hearing about David Koresh or like just, you know what I mean? Seeing like a soundbite of David Koresh, right? Like there's a difference. So I think there is something that disadvantages him a lot in not being present. The DNC decided to do a largely virtual convention with, I think, a little bit of, couple of nights of televised stuff. People are going to be broadcasting from all over the country as opposed to everyone in Milwaukee. So basically, we're not going to see like standard conventions from both parties. Are you bummed? Are you happy? Are you indifferent? Where are you with this? Tala.
I mean, you know, I wasn't going to watch the RNC convention anyways, right? And I think most people aren't. Like, the most we're going to get from that are these, as you say, like, totally weird, flat, void-like speeches where we'll get, like, we'll just get, like, the most outrageous clips, which probably, like, we'll just watch, like, Sarah Cooper lip sync, you know, preferably. Right. And I mean, listen, the DNC, first of all, they went to tele-rally mode, quote unquote, like way earlier to the convention. And so I think that it's just going to be like better planned. It's going to be more fun, like the DNC, I think, always is in terms of like, whatever, they're going to get, you know, their celebrities and their like musical. I think it's going to be more fun. Am I going to watch it? Like, probably not. I mean, I just, at this point, I just want to know who the VP is. Like, that's why I'm invested in that convention.
Question for you, Tala. If the VP is like, is there a VP that pick, you know, of the names that get floated around, those names being Tammy Duckworth, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren,
Stacey Abrams.
Yeah, Stacey. If she's, I guess, still on that list, there's a couple others. That I'm blanking on their names. Susan Rice, I think, has been on the list. Is there anyone whose name has been floated that you would just be massively disappointed?
Oh, disappointed.
Yes.
Yes, as a twist. Listen, I mean, at this point, okay, here are my feelings about Joe Biden very, very briefly. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm not expecting to be like super excited by Joe Biden or surprised at this point by anything that he does. I think they're handling him well, whatever. I don't need to be excited. That's very clear to me about this election. I just need to like keep my foot on the gas, vote. Right? Yeah. But so I think almost like any VP pick will be good, will be like a novel, if nothing else. Like, I would be more excited about a Stacey Abrams or an Elizabeth Warren than maybe some others. But like, even if it's Kamala, who like I feel like less excited about, maybe I could freaking get behind her. And I think she will help him ultimately. And I think he needs something new. Like, the man just needs, like, a new shirt. And, right. like, he needs a new look. Like, he needs a little makeover, and I feel like he's going to get it through the VP somehow.
Trayvon, so I'm just going to ask you the same question, but I'm going to throw into the pot a couple of more names, the names that I couldn't remember. People like Tammy Baldwin, Karen Bass. There was one more I wanted to tell. Oh, Keisha Lance Bottoms. Again, is there anyone that you would be disappointed by?
I feel like I wouldn't be disappointed so much by a particular individual. It would probably be more so someone that I don't feel completes the ticket in a way that people in this particular point in America want to see. Like, that can provide people with something that they feel comfortable enough with, that they know enough about the person, that they feel like they have the experience to not feel like, oh, it's still for the most part just Joe Biden. Like, I would love to see Elizabeth Warren get the nomination, because I feel like I'm fine with Biden being the guy, because he is a competent person, which we haven't had in a very long time. But at the same time, it would be nice to have a consumer advocate, somebody who represents a part of the party that is clearly growing rapidly and can help push us forward and push Joe Biden forward on some of the issues around things like healthcare and taxes and all the things that people rallied around her and Bernie for. That
does Kamala's experience as a prosecutor worry you?
A little, yeah. Mm-hmm. It does. It's
would you be disappointed if she's the one?
I would not be very excited by it. Okay. I would be very kind of, I guess, indifferent, for lack of a better word, but it wouldn't be based on her record as a prosecutor, because I feel very strongly about issues around policing and things of that nature. And I don't feel like I trust her yet in that regard. She hasn't convinced me that the things she's done were not who she is, and that she would bring that to the White House. And that troubles me.
Right. Yeah. It's a tough choice. I got to be honest, because, well, like, if it's me, it's, I mean, listeners know this, because I was so just obscenely in the bag for E-dubs. And
yes.
Like, yeah, the too. Love letters that I have written to Elizabeth Warren. Right?
Same.
And saying that, I also recognize it's a very difficult time to have two white people on the ticket. But also that she had, like, incredible support from leadership of organizations of color, you know? So there it's weird.
It's hard, because I do think her policies actually support people of color more than people, some of the candidates that are people of color, which is a bummer, you know? But
yeah, total bummer. Just, total, yeah.
I think I think another thing too that I think people definitely need to realize now through November is, a lot of people, especially non-people of color, feel like they can make all these excuses for why they can't vote for someone like Biden. And because they don't want to, like, hold their nose and vote for a candidate they're not in love with. And to that I say, Black people have been holding our nose and voting for candidates we don't like our entire existence in this country that we've had the ability to vote. And there was one time in this country's history where we were excited about a candidate, and it was not that long ago. And so if we can spend our almost entire existence in this country holding our nose and voting for white people who we don't necessarily know that we can trust to support our issues and do the things necessary to make the best effort to propel the country forward, you can fucking vote for Joe Biden to get rid of Donald Trump. one time in your life. Like, you can do that. It's not going to hurt you. Like, it makes me so upset because it's just like, grow up, like, be an adult. Like, that's not how politics works.
Yeah. 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 And I also, as someone who's like, I'm never probably, Tala, going to see an Iranian American, right?
maybe VP someday. Super, super lucky.
But, you know, yeah. So it's like, yeah, be an adult. I think that's a really excellent point.
Say it. I was just saying, now is also, things are so dire for so many communities that now especially is the time to be an adult and register to vote and vote for Biden. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's it. I want to just quickly turn our attention to some of the fear surrounding the actual mechanics of voting. Now, I don't know if you know this, but in my district here, in New York City, our rep is Carolyn Maloney, and she had a very serious primary challenge from Suraj Patel, and the margin that she has over him is so minor. And there's 65,000 ballots that have yet to be counted that were vote. That is my baby crying, if you can hear that. Okay. There's 65,000. She is not happy about the fact that the that election hasn't been determined yet. Yeah, she's really upset. And she's like, Elizabeth Warren. That's what she cries every time. So Carolyn Maloney and Suraj Patel, that race has not yet been decided, right? And this is not just because it's a close race, blah, 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 but it's part of the problem is that the actual mechanics of, like, literally the Postal Service's involvement in getting absentee ballots and then when and then are they – like, they found a random box of absentee ballots in Chicago that were for a Wisconsin election in April. You know what I mean? Like, these kinds of things are happening because – the mechanism for mail-in ballots hasn't been tested before in most of these states. I mean, there's some states that already have that, right? Like Oregon or whatever. So for them, it was really easy. But for states, you know, most states that don't have this like robust mechanism in place, it's very difficult. We're almost in a situation, I'm just going to say something crazy. We're almost in a situation where we kind of need to ask people, if you are healthy, please go vote in person. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't work, like, if you could just throw on a mask, go stand in a really long line, you know what I mean? Right. And socially distant vote in a safe way, please do that, because I'm worried about actual physical votes being counted. Is that something that keeps you up at night?
Oh my God. Yes. The other thing I want to say is also, I've been seeing a little bit of this online, like telling younger, healthier people to go be poll workers. Like, I think that's really important too.
Yes.
Like, it's usually, you know, people older over 60. People that do not need to be sitting in a, you know, airless room all day. I'm super worried about this. I think if everybody had like the best intentions, we would still be pretty fucked. But obviously a lot of people do not have the best intentions for vote by mail. I mean, they're like, Trump is just trying to dismantle USPS like left and right.
Right. Yeah, funding may run out in September. So that's the other weird aspect
of this. How convenient. Yeah. Yeah. I tried to get an absentee ballot for New York and I just never received it. Like, I just never received it, you know? Like, I'm worried. I'm really worried about it. Yeah. I also think, like, the other thing I think we have to, like, get used to now is, like, we're not going to get the results on election
that
night.
That day. No.
And, like, people need to, like, I think we just need to accept it now and know so that the bullshit CNN stuff, which I know is still going to happen, like, it's like, I think we just need to tamp down expectations, know that, like, we're going to find out in a week, because again, like, they're still counting votes in New York City, which is insane, but is totally going to happen.
Can I make a pitch to solve some of our problems?
Please.
The pitch is, I think young, healthy influencers YouTube stars, and celebrities. And I know some of you listen to this fucking podcast should be poll workers. Right? Like, you don't need the money, so immediately donate that money. But right. You may actually bring the young people out to vote. Again, it's like, I don't want to, like, encourage people to go out if they're not healthy. But the
if Kylie Jenner so wants to do something good for the world, go sit at a polling station and let 10,000 18-year-olds line up to vote at her polling station.
And I don't know if Kylie Jenner is allowed to go be at a polling station in a swing state, but that's what I really want to see. So, because she can take a private jet.
Very good idea.
Thank you.
This is brilliant.
Can someone please make this happen? And by the way, I know influencers, if you're listening, make it happen. Create the hashtag. You could take all the credit. But that is my idea.
Call it hashtag please. Influence the polls.
Oh, there it is. Influence the polls. I love that. All right. People of Fake the Nation, let me know. Does this keep you up at night? And if this doesn't keep you up at night, what aspect of the 2028 elections do keep you up at night? Send me all your anxieties. All right, let us move into topic number 3. We read a piece called The Real White Fragility by Ross Douthat in The Times. And many of you are wondering if it's a summary of the white guys that I have dated. And that's what I thought when I first saw the title of the article. It wasn't that. I'm going to quote Douthat. He says, if your bourgeois order is built on a cycle of competition and reward, and the competition gets fiercer while the rewards diminish, then instead of young people hooking up safely on the way to a lucrative job and a dual income marriage with 2.1 kids, you'll get young people set adrift, unable to pair off, postponing marriage permanently while they wait for stability that never comes. So let's launch into this by asking the central question that's posed by the article. Does the white upper class feel exhausted and oppressed by meritocracy? And before you answer, I have a feeling you may want to completely dismantle the entire premise of this piece. But before we do that, let's just argue, you know, the merits of the premise as they are. Trayvon, what were your thoughts when you read this?
I wanted to destroy my computer. Because I can't, like, as someone who has an opinion piece in the New York Times today, it's kind of astounding that these words also get in the New York Times.
By the way, I did not know you had an opinion piece in the Times today.
I didn't even know it was coming out today.
My God, plug. What's it called?
It's a piece about John Donaldson, the most famous baseball player you've never heard of.
Headline
of the piece is, this great black baseball player still isn't in the Hall of Fame, is the headline.
Wow. And, check that out. That's so exciting.
Yeah, working on a movie about him. And so, it's just, I mean, most of the stuff he writes, I want to vomit even getting through half, like if I can get through half of it. But like, this is just absurd. Like, I don't even know where to begin. It's
well, like, I mean, the premise that is so, I think, hard to get on board with is that meritocracy is the thing in the first place. I think that's like red flag number one.
Yeah, like what?
even in the upper echelons, like, right, even in the center of white privilege, if you have a person, you know, an upper income person who's white and has connections, and then an upper income person who's white and doesn't have connections, it's still the one with the connections, right? It's not like it's all meritocracy up here. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's a big problem. But I think there's one thing, and Tal, I'll ask you this. There's something that I thought was kind of interesting. He talked about that we have a problem of an overproduction of elites, that we have a surplus, which he describes as like, we've had a surplus of smart young Americans pursuing admissions to a narrow list of elite colleges whose enrollment doesn't expand with population, even as foreign students increasingly compete for the same stagnant share of slots. And that seems to be true, that we do have like more and more and more people that are super qualified to go to these elite colleges, but are getting rejected just because the sheer volume of people that are qualified to go to these elite colleges. Do you think the overproduction of elites has led to an exhaustion? It's some kind of an exhaustion of this competitive, we'll say again, meritocracy.
This Ross outfit, I struggle with him so much. Also, can I just be petty for a minute and say that think he's a bad writer. Like, I think his writing is really convoluted and like difficult to read sometimes.
I'm like,
who's your editor? Maybe Trayvon, you can find out in New York Times.
I have to confess, I had to read it like twice because I had a hard time, like, you know, following the main point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he kind of wrote five paragraphs before he even sort of about this sort of meritocracy before he like took it to BLM. Ugh, ugh. What was your question, Nagin? I'm sorry. I'm so distracted by how much I dislike this. Okay. I just want to say also, it's like, I can be cynical, but like the cynicism, the fact that he felt like this needed to be written right now to say that like, you know, college educated elite white people are sad. And so like, that's maybe why they're getting like, you know, hopping on the train or whatever, however he wants to sort of, express the sentiment of BLM and of this social movement. Like, it's so fucking cynical. That kills me. But wait, what was I going to say about, the other thing I think he done this before in other articles of his I read, like he makes these statements where you kind of can't, you know, prove against it, but he's leaving out so much of the bigger context. It's like, yeah, I mean, sure, there's a lot more elites, this like meritocracy, there's less jobs maybe for them, but it's like, let's talk about capitalism. Like, let's talk about like where we're headed. Like, let's talk about automation and jobs and technology, and that we don't have a social safety net in this country and we don't have healthcare for people. Like, those are the things making people sad. And like, yes, I guess it also ultimately affects, you know, rich college educated white people.
Right. Right. So I think that's exactly it. The underpinning of whether or not you feel anxiety isn't that meritocratic systems are overburdened, overtaxed with so many, with this so-called overproduction of elites. That's not what gives people anxiety. What gives people anxiety is that they have no social safety net, even, and I think there's something that's true, which is that even if you do graduate from an elite school, the universal thing is that we're all going to feel anxiety because we don't have healthcare. We're all going to feel anxiety because we don't have universal childcare. We're all going to feel anxiety because there's no universal pre-K. We're all going to feel anxiety, right? Because, you know, there's no one there to take care of our parents who might be ailing. These are all universal that give us anxiety across race. And but not necessarily across class, right? And it's not about the high competition of the meritocratic system, right? Like, that's the thing that it's like he kind of fails to mention that we have no social safety net.
He always does this. He brings it back to like, what we're missing is the traditional family structure. What we're missing is religion. Like, it's so predictable. Ugh.
I do want to say that there is something like that. If religion is diminishing in importance, and if like your neighborhood is diminishing in importance, if like, you know, the Elks Club or whatever the fuck it is, if those kinds of institutions are diminishing in importance, and those were the places that you could have turned in times of need, or that you could turn for some psychological comfort, and those institutions are increasingly gone, I do see his point that like, there's those institutions serve some sort of function before in compensating for what was low incomes. You know what I mean? And now we don't have those institutions. I guess my thing is we shouldn't need those institutions if the government was structured such that people were centered by it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Trayvon, is there, do you want to, my question for you is, what about, yeah, the use of the term white fragility, I think in it, in on its face was problematic. Just like, why do you even need to use that term?
Right.
Can you maybe explain to listeners why that might be, like what white fragility means historically? And why kind of giving us this new take is really upsetting.
I mean, when you if you understand Robin DiAngelo's definition of white fragility, which is to mean that when it comes to dealing with issues of race and being confronted with those things, white people have a tendency to try to center themselves. And when the conversation becomes too heavy for them, they break down and are no longer participants in the conversation. And then it becomes about placating them and their feelings around the thing you're trying to discuss or debate or break down in that regard. And for this article, this opinion piece, to even invoke the title.
Yeah.
It's astounding. It to me it feels like he had to turn in a piece. He looked around the New York Times office and saw a copy of White Fragility and just slapped and just decided, I'm gonna talk about the real white fragility as soon as I figure it out. And
right, landed. Like he had the title.
Yeah, he got five paragraphs in, like you said, before he got to the actual topic and was like, and now bring it on home, Ross.
Yeah, it was, it's remarkable. I think, especially in the summer of 2020, like, can I see this article coming out in 2022 or something when we have a little bit more like time where we can look at the events of the summer and like think about how they've unraveled, you know, like maybe, you know, but this is crazy.
He doesn't even give a good redefining of what white fragility would mean. Like there's not even a good example of what the quote unquote real white fragility is. It's a lack of understanding the original idea from the start.
Right. He said something about the SATs. Like, if we get rid of the SATs, then that means that elite schools don't have to, like, bring Asians in. And then I just,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, white people are going to use this moment, are interested in this moment because they're going to use it for themselves. Like, what?
Like, it was really confusing and really, yeah, it was really crazy. All right. Well, on that note, I would say you don't have to read that piece. We just basically told you why you don't have to read it. I mean, I'm always interested because, like, you know, sometimes you read an article like that and maybe it's like well written and you're like, okay, I mean, I'm glad to kind of see the thinking of a person like that.
Right.
But this was really poor thinking. It was a title waiting for an article.
Yeah. That's right.
It's like that's when I saw the title, I was like, ooh, what's that? You know? And then I read it, I was like, ugh. Okay. Well, I have to do a very exciting thing, which is a shout out an election. District 2 in Nebraska. This comes from one of our listeners. District 2 in Nebraska. And the listener points out a place like many in the middle of the country, which is often ignored and also much less red than it's made out to be. This district makes up most of Omaha, by the way. Don Bacon and Kara Eastman are running against each other for the second time this year. The listener writes, Barron doesn't stand for much besides voting along party lines. Before running for office, however, Eastman founded a local nonprofit addressing environmental factors on children's health. So this is an interesting race. She has also received, Kara Eastman has also received the coveted Elizabeth Warren endorsement. So I just wanted to, you know, if you are in District 2 in Nebraska, look at this race, get involved with this race. And listeners of Fake the Nation, tell me, what are the interesting races that you are in the middle of that I should know, that I should, shout out loud here on the podcast? By the way, this listener pointed out Nebraska and Maine. We've talked about this before, but I want to remind everyone. Nebraska and Maine are the only two states that don't have winner-take-all electoral votes. So if Biden wins in Omaha, he'll receive one of the three electoral votes that Nebraska has, which is exciting. So don't forget about Omaha, guys. Don't write off Omaha. Omaha could get us an electoral vote. Again, the Electoral College is fucking ridiculous and we should abolish it. All right. I'm so excited that you guys were on the show. We like to end the show by asking, is there something that is making you hopeful about our current situation? I know it's a tough one. It could be like a new brownie recipe that you tried and worked really well, or it could be a world leader. It really doesn't matter.
I think the prime minister or president.
Oh my God, I was literally about to say that. She's the hope.
Jacinda is my everything.
Jacinda?
She's like
Jacinda?
My North Star. Yeah, just every time I just go read New Zealand politics just to see what she's up to.
It was her birthday, I think, yesterday. Also, / she's only 40, and I just stared at her lovingly and gave her like 10 seconds of like really good birthday energy.
She's amazing.
Oh, you know, it's sad that New Zealand isn't like a world power and that it's like a teeny tiny little country with just like a few people in it. But you know,
it's a great vacation if you ever want to go, though. I love it there.
Have you been?
I spent 2 weeks there on vacation a couple years ago, and it's incredible. I would love to live there.
All right. I will give you both Jacinda Ardern as what's making you hopeful. But I also want to let the listeners know where to find you online so they can follow all your work. Trayvon, where do they do that?
I am at Trayvon on Twitter and Instagram.
Travon. He was an early adapter. Tala, where are you at?
I'm jealous of that, Trayvon. I'm at Tala Ash with an E. Twitter, Instagram, you know.
And watch her handiwork on
if I ever get
DC's
back to work
tomorrow. but they could see the back
sure,
episode,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. And this week I'm gonna be on Wait Wait Don't Tell Me, so tune into that and you know, other things that'll probably happen soon. Wait, wasn't there one more thing I was supposed to mention? I can't remember. But what I would really like to do now is thank the people who make Fake the Nation possible. That's our wonderful producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, Gabi Alter wrote our theme music, and Lily Fleshler helps with research. And you know we love to hear from you. I especially love to hear about the elections you're excited about. But send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail 331-901-0005 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, please do leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find the show. And I believe, and that's it. And we'll see you next week.